Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Nation, the official podcast of comicbook.com. I am your host, Kofi Outlaw, and with me today, I got Matthew Aguilar.
Yo, what up?
Janelle Wheeler.
Hey, everybody.
Connor Casey.
Kofi, I don't want to alarm you, but something's wrong with the timeline.
That's amazing.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
Wolverine claws. You never run out of gags.
Yes.
Never.
Look out, Carrot Top. You got competition, buddy.
Oh, man.
And coming on and joining us from another universe, from another reality in the comicbook.com podcast universe, Phase Zero host, you know him, Mr. Brandon Davis is back with us.
The timelines have exploded. Anything is possible now. Is this even canon? I don't know.
Oh, we don't even know. But what is canon is BD is here because he is, I mean, I don't want to say hot off the road, but I don't even think, is that the man cave? Are you back home?
I am home for till 5:30 a.m. tomorrow.
Okay, there you go. BD is back out on the road because the world is back in motion. And so he is hard at work and seeing all these movies that you guys want to see, getting all these scoops that you guys want to know. And he's just come back from seeing a very special movie that we would going to love here. The Suicide Squad.
And,
BD, I think you're still a little bit limited in what you can say, but we wanted to get your reaction since you have just seen The Suicide Squad on the big screen. What can you tell us about it?
Can I curse on this show? Because I feel like that's the only proper way to represent how I feel about this movie. I won't.
Wait,
but
good
I
or
have
bad?
To.
I think we can, actually, but I can't remember.
Yo, we got a hard Dark Knight PG-13 there allowance from Jim Viscardi, so you can go full Dark Knight.
That movie,
I think you get
is,
one. Yeah,
I'm just gonna put it this way: The Suicide Squad makes Deadpool look PG-13. Like
what?
It is insane. It is hyper violent. It is just, I mean, like it is R-rated in every way. There is nudity, male and female. There is faces getting blown off. Like, and then like,
I like Janelle.
Yeah, I know Janelle.
Both
Richard,
men and women nude.
Richard, we're going to need a timestamp. We're going to need a timestamp.
That was amazing.
We're going to need a timestamp for this clip.
They make you fall in love with characters that you didn't expect to fall in love with. I don't know that I can sit here and be like, I loved the movie. The more I've thought about it, the more I've liked it. It literally like left me speechless when it was over in a way I've never felt after watching a movie before.
Wow.
And I think I was partially overwhelmed by some of the elements of this film. But I loved most of the film. I mean, like it's truly James Gunn so unleashed that it feels like Warner Brothers is saying, like, we will let a filmmaker do whatever they want. Watch this. And James Gunn was just like, you sure? You should. Let's. Okay. All right. Let's see. And they really just didn't reel him in at all. Like, he takes it further than I expected him to. And I don't think I'm overhyping. Like, I just in quality, I think most people are going to love it. I really enjoyed, almost the start to finish the whole film. There were just parts of it where I was like, wow, that was a lot. And there's characters who are not, you're not going to expect to fall in love with some of these characters, and you will. Like King Shark, you're going to love, but you knew that. But like Ratcatcher 2 and Polka Dot Man, you're going to love them.
I was going to ask you that. I was going to say, who's the best character in the film?
Man, Peacemaker's the funniest. Ratcatcher 2 and Polka Dot Man are fantastic. Bloodsport is, like Idris Elba's so good as Bloodsport. Viola Davis as Waller is just so conniving and it's just such a Joel Kinnaman as Rick Flagg. Yo, he's great. All the characters are good. There's not one character that you're like Margot has possibly the best, but one of like her top three, if not the best scenes as Harley through three movies yet. Like there is a great Harley Quinn scene that's just going to rock people's socks. Like it's, the movie is insane. The only way
you're not
to describe
tell
it,
us the whole scene for the podcast.
There is a lot that you haven't seen in the trailers. Like it feels like you've seen a lot of the movie and you have seen a lot of it, but there's also really a lot. And from the first scene of the movie, you're going to sit down and say, holy shit, they're really doing this. From the first scene, you're going to be blown away. It's unbelievable.
Does it ever feel like it's overwhelmed because of the number of characters involved, or do they actually all kind of get their little moment?
I don't think anybody really got the short end of the stick on it being too crowded. It doesn't feel like, it feels like a lot. That's the only way it feels like Guardians. Other than that, other than having a group of unlikely heroes that don't really like each other having to work together, like, and balancing all of them really well, it doesn't really have anything to come with Guardians, but that's kind of just the premise for ensemble films in general of this type. So if you appreciate the character balance in Guardians, you will appreciate the character balance in this. I think everybody gets their moment. Obviously there's kind of some that have more story than others, but everybody has their moment for sure. Nice.
Should we be excited for the Peacemaker series?
Peace, dude, John Cena's hilarious. He's hilarious, man. I think yes, you should be excited. It's going to be, I just had a phone call where it just like, it's going to be wild. It's going to be, Peacemaker is going to be insane, especially if it is anything like, and I'm hearing that it's going to amplify from what we saw in Suicide Squad. So nice.
Some of those Cena scenes were getting some like not such love from the trailers. Like I saw some of those, like, oh, they're just not whatever. I thought they were hilarious. So like, is that pretty much on the stuff we have seen from him in the trailers? Is that pretty much on par with all the other stuff in the movie? Or is there just like this other character angle to him that you don't really get a feel for?
There's definitely a little bit more depth to him. And it's like this impressive level of consistency that Cena plays the role with, because that trailer humor gets expounded upon in the film and it makes more sense. Cause I'm not going to lie, when I saw that trailer, I was kind of like, I don't know if this is my brand of humor. Like Blockers wasn't a movie I really enjoyed that much. And I felt like we're kind of bringing that out. Some people love Blockers. You're not wrong if you do. It wasn't a movie for me. But Cena really kind of does a little bit of what he did in Blockers, but gets to take it further. And he does it so consistently and so well throughout the film that you just buy into it. And I thought he was really funny. And him and Idris Elba together have a great rapport throughout the film. Nice.
What was the event like? Like, how was it attending the premiere?
It was a mostly empty theater. There's probably like 25 people in like a 40X theater. And I mean, I sat next to my friend Kirsten, who I haven't seen in a year and a half. And it was great to see like Sean O'Connell from Cinema Blend and Eric Eisenberg and all the people who I used to see, you know, a couple times a month. And we don't really get to do this stuff anymore. It was just really awesome to catch up with people. I mean, I'm vaccinated. I feel not too worried. Obviously still want to be careful, but I don't think I would be going out to these things if I wasn't vaccinated. So it's a nice peace of mind to have that shot in the arm and be able to go out and do this stuff. I had a great time.
You heard it here. Get your vaccines, ladies and gentlemen.
Go get a vaccine. Like, come on. Like, if you're not vaccinated yet, that feels like a choice, and you should be.
On just on a closing topic, just on the kind of building off that point, do you think Suicide Squad is a theater movie, or do you think people will be satisfied with a HBO Max viewing, since this is one of the maybe last ones we get in the double release?
IMAX. IMAX, biggest screen you can. Like, it's going to be a good movie if you watch it at home. You're not going to be mad about seeing the film. You will enjoy it more with a loud sound system on a big screen. I'm seeing it again in IMAX. I saw it in 4DX, or not 4DX, RPX, whatever the big, not whatever like the step below IMAX is, I guess, that Regal offers.
RPX,
that's what it was. I saw it in RPX. I'm going to go see it opening night out here in Nashville in IMAX for sure.
Nice.
Awesome. All right, BD, thank you. Now, that's just the beginning, because you've been running around doing a lot, and that was just the beginning of your journey. You also, while doing Suicide Squad, you got to, as just an additive to your itinerary, you went to the premiere of Space Jam, A New Legacy, and you didn't know at the time, but we had another agent, comic book agent, lurking around those
places.
Let's bring him on now, Agent X himself. Mr. Aaron Perrine is here.
What's going on? Wait, what? What? It's so interesting to see y'all here.
You guys don't know, Aaron is a regular with BD as a host over on our Phase Zero Marvel podcast. So this is our first official kind of Comic Book Nation Phase Zero crossover.
Alternate timeline.
Alternate timeline one. And a little Talking Dead, if you want to get classic over here, since we have both
Jeanette
and
Amy.
We're doing
after the dead.
We got a whole crossword puzzle. This is like a Lost episode. So anyway,
well, I'm about to get those Walking Dead episodes. You coming over or what?
Yes, let's go. Oh my gosh,
next week, let's watch it.
Walking Dead, I'm so down.
Behave it in the comments as the multiverse is open. Yeah, comic book multiverse is here.
What Loki did.
Yeah, I mean, the only way we could do it after that Loki finale, but we'll get to that. So Aaron and BD, you guys were both at the Space Jam premiere out in LA and like a Lost episode, had no idea and just kind of passed by each other without knowing. But then you guys like found out, like, what was that all about?
BD, you want to go first or you want me to explain it?
Man, I want to hear your take first because I was so shocked to find out you were there.
Oh, my God. So I showed up when they told us to show up way earlier in the afternoon. I was outside for the pre-party, you know, hanging out, doing the contest. If you were following me on Twitter, you saw all the setup outside. They really blew it out for the kids for this movie. And then as I'm walking to the theater, my phone buzzes and I see Jenna Anderson, also a Phase Zero podcast. Go ahead, stream that. Spotify, Apple Music. Go ahead. If you give Raytheon 5 stars, if you
it's
give
all,
us
it's all
stars,
the same bag. It's all the same it. Bag. Go for
it's
go
all
for
the same
it.
Bag. Yeah. So, yes. She's like, BD, did you know Aaron was there? I'm like, whoa. Brandon's here? Where's Brandon? And I look over on BD's like Twitter and he's in the big, like a big screening with the stars. He's out there with Chris Bosch. He's hanging out. He sees Zendaya. I'm just like, how in the world did I not see Brandon Davis out here? Like, this is insane. We were less than 30 feet away from each other the entire time.
You didn't see him at all.
So here's like, what happened.
The whole
so this
night?
Is the yeah. This is how now. This is the part of the movie where we go back 2 hours and we find out the other side of this story.
This
so
bad.
I went to see a separate movie at IMAX, which was so cool. I've never been to IMAX HQ. And they did a screening at IMAX HQ, which was cool because I just like they had posters for movies everywhere. They really didn't have anything other than that, but I just liked seeing the posters. So I go to that movie and afterwards, like I was staying right downtown and on my way to that, like when I left, I saw the Space Jam setup and I thought it was just like an activation, like for influencers to go like play basketball and make content, all that stuff. So I texted a Warner Brothers rep a picture and I said, hey, I'm staying on this block. Are you going to be here? I haven't seen you in over a year. Would love to catch up. My friend over there. Who works for the studio. And so she texted me, was like, yeah, I'll be there. Come by. Like, if you come after 7, that'll be safe. And I was like, okay, cool. After I get out of the movie I saw at IMAX, I get a text. I was like, hey, do you want to see Space Jam? And I was like, oh, yeah. Like, I haven't seen it. Why not? I mean, I'm in LA. You know, I don't know. I'm just in my hotel. Of course I want to see Space Jam. So she's like, okay, cool. I'll put some tickets aside for you. I didn't know this was the Space Jam premiere. Like, I thought she just, like, had, like, seats at a screening. Like, this was a press screening. I was like, okay. So I go down there and, like, find out it is a full – like, when I saw Don Cheadle, that's when I knew. Like, this is the Space Jam premiere.
It was a classy event.
Dude, yeah. I was like, I'm underdressed. I feel like a bum. I checked out Twitter. I saw Jenna tagging me in Aaron's tweets. I saw Aaron dunking on the basketball court they set up. And I was like, hold up. Me and Aaron have been working together every Wednesday, previously Fridays, for the better half of the past 30 weeks. We've never met in person. And just now we walked into this movie together and we didn't even see each other. The only reason I got tickets was because somebody canceled. The person from EW canceled. They had great seats. And they were like, well, let's not waste these. So I got their seats. Thank you, EW.
That's awesome.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is what a comic book humble brag looks like. And like this is our ultimate clout. We just got guys everywhere because tickets. And then, yeah, I mean, God, it's making me miss The Office. This is like, there's a little small sample of what The Office is like. So,
oh, yeah.
There's a lot of people on here. I haven't talked to this many comic book employees at the same time.
Yeah, in a long time. So, I mean, I guess while we're here, we should all at least talk. What did you guys think of Space Jam? I'm almost done. I started this morning, but I've had a busy morning, so I'm almost done.
Oh, you pulled a me. You like watched, like, you made it through 75%.
Yeah.
I'm halfway.
I just finished it like 20 minutes ago.
Yeah. I'm enjoying it. I mean, it is enjoyable, but it is at the same time the ultimate Warner Brothers product, like, of synergy of sports, movies, like anime, all these different brand reference, like a damn Lego movie or something, or Ready Player One. Like, yeah, but it works. I mean, if you could get over the whole product of it all, it is kind of fun and funny. And LeBron James is surprisingly good on a kind of geeky level with, like, references and Easter eggs and kind of having fun with the whole thing. And, I had a lot of issues seeing Lola Bunny again. That triggered a lot of things I thought me and my therapist to close the book on. But, yeah.
Jeez, man.
But here we are. Hey, man, I'm not alone. I've been in support groups and everything. I'm not alone in this. So that was a whole thing.
But don't post my cosplay.
Yeah, but I enjoyed it. What'd you guys think? BD, Aaron, you guys were at the premiere, so it's easy to get premiere-itis, but tell us what you thought.
I thought it was a fun movie, man. I don't know what people are expecting from Space Jam. Like, LeBron makes fun of himself for 2 hours, bro. Like, what else do you want? It's funny. Like, the movie makes fun of LeBron the whole time, and he's a good sport about it. It's got cool little Warner Brothers references. It's a silly kids movie. It's a little too long. The basketball game at the end, I'm just like, all right, like, really, we're not done yet. But overall, I'm like, it's a fun movie. It's like, it's not Jordan Peele or Christopher Nolan or Steven Spielberg. It's a fine movie, dude. It's a kid's movie, and I thought it was fun. The biggest criticism I have, though, is if you watch this movie, you'll see part of the story calls for all of these Warner Brothers characters to be courtside at the game. And so it's like, oh, cool, the Night King is there, Pennywise is there, like, all these Harry Potter characters are there, the Penguin is there, and more that you'll spot. Maybe, like, sorry if those are spoilers, but...
There's, like, minute-to-minute references. You're good.
So... But they just have these, like, cosplay versions of the characters. Like, it's not actually, it's obviously not Daniel Radcliffe and the real Night King and Danny DeVito as Penguin. It's like they just kind of put people in these, like, cheap, cheesy costumes.
No.
Like, Joaquin Phoenix's Joker looks like he was pulled out of WonderCon and thrown onto the set. And it's just like, okay.
Yeah, Mr. Freeze definitely has that vibe. It definitely has that, like, oh, hey, it's an impersonator of our
bro. Rojan only goes so far, bro. You got to go out on Hollywood Boulevard and be like, who's out here today? Y'all want to be in Space Jam?
You can dunk
with LeBron. Come on in.
Yeah. That's why the cartoon cameos work so much better is that they're just cartoons. You know, it's like that's why when the Jetsons pop up or like any of the Hanna-Barbera characters, like all those characters, it works so well because it's them. As opposed to like the Clockwork Orange guy.
Yeah, what the hell?
Yeah, there's some great references for the old animated characters when they do them, like slot them in movies like Granny and The Matrix and Wile E. Coyote as Mad Max, which was my personal favorite.
So Speedy Gonzalez
is in The Matrix. Should we just?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Aaron, what'd you think, man?
I think it's just a fun family movie. I think that the vitriol online is part everybody's just mad about a lot of things. And part of it is this is the only way to get ad revenue is to get these clicks. That is almost all of it. If you look on Rotten Tomatoes, the original Space Jam is only like a 30. Okay. Like it's not this paragon of like everything. And I love basketball. I love basketball. Look at my hat. Like that's where I used to work. I love sports. Okay. And the kids in the theater were having a great time. All the kids, the adults like loved it. There's a certain cameo about midway through the film. BD, you know what I'm talking about. I think you guys know what I'm talking about since you've seen half of it too, where I didn't know if it was going to work because it was rumored that it was going to happen that somehow MJ shows up. And then it happens and the crowd really enjoyed it. The kids got a big laugh out of it. And I'm like, this is a more real representation of who's going to be seeing this movie than these reviewers are. Like while I was walking out, the kicker to my review is I'm walking out of the screening and there's a little 7-year-old dude with a baseball hat walking with his dad. And he like turns to his dad and earnestly goes, that was a really good movie. And I'm like, you know what, little man, you're
so wholesome.
It was so nice. And I'm Aaron, like, is that little kid, huh?
bringing the humanity back to this internet.
That's good, man.
That's what it's about. He sounds so earnest, too, like it was the best thing he's ever seen. And I'm like, you go, little dude. You know what? Who am I? Come on, you know. Oh. So it's a good little movie. You'll enjoy it, especially you got a house full of kids. You can't really go wrong. That 2 hours of like somewhat non activity is like, there you go.
Yeah. Hey. Yeah. Yeah. Yo. I'm not. I showed my son Space Jam the other day. He was fascinated. I think he'll be blown away by this. And as long as he sits still for those 2 hours, like you said, I'm good. Movie fulfilled. Yeah. I agree with you. And like, yeah. It, there's no point in being like a crazy adult critic about this and going in like, this is not for you, man. Just keep your intellectual thoughts for Black Widow and its deep.
That's why I like the fact that like they actually the game itself is a little long, but I just love the second half because it really just like it just puts the spotlight on Looney Tunes as a group of characters, and it's like, man, they're just stupid fun. Like it's so fun and it's so just like it's in on the joke, and I just like that part they played earnestly, and I dug it. Like some parts I was kind of like, you know, I was like, oh, that's we're bordering on cheesy or whatever, but it's fine, you know. Yeah. But like that one I was like, I bought in. Like when Bugs Bunny is at the board and I was like, I bought in. I was like, oh, hell yeah. All the Wile E. Coyote stuff. Like, that was awesome. Like, there's so many fun moments. And it's just like goes to show, like, Looney Tunes rock.
But like the soundtrack, Space Jam was like the best back in the day. So I'm about halfway through and I'm waiting for like a banging song, like something to get me on that. Everybody get up. I sound a slam.
Yeah,
I don't want to sing too long.
The 90s will never return, but we can. I mean, there'll be something for the kids. Like
you project the Rough Riders beat in there. Did you notice that? It was like, I was like, is Drag On coming out right now? It was like, there was a total Rough Riders beat that was in there. Like someone redid it.
Wow.
It was like,
we're going off, but all right. All right. Get the kids, watch some Space Jam. You'll be okay. If you're an adult, maybe not your cup of tea, but we got more movies we'll be reviewing later that we can talk about. Maybe you'll like a little bit better, but all right. Thanks BD for the reaction from the Suicide Squad. Sounds like a definite. We're going to be all talking about that when it hits. And thank you guys for that story about, I love this clout. We just flex some clout on this podcast. So thanks for making us look good in the clout department. All right. I think Rich is going to be saying we need to take a break. But when we come back, we are going to talk Marvel's Loki and the finale and what the future of the MCU or the MM, like what is it? We call it MCM now. Like what are we calling this thing? So we're going to talk about all of that. Got another movie review. Got to talk wrestling. Got to talk comics. So stay tuned for all of that good stuff. Ah, we lost some people. The multiverse is realigned once again. Brandon and Aaron had to go. They're both busy. Like I said, BD's still on the road. Aaron's got a ton of stuff in motion. So they had to go. We want to thank them for joining us. And make sure you can always catch both of them on Phase Zero, our Marvel-themed podcast, which is right now every Wednesday, also at 12 noon, streaming here on Twitch, on YouTube, on Facebook, or on podcast platforms for the audio. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, the whole nine. So be sure to check out our Phase Zero podcast as we keep this podcast universe growing. Also, if you're a Pokemon fan, we also got a wild Pokemon Has Appeared podcast with Jim Viscardi on Mondays. So that's a total comic book podcast plug.
He's lurking in the comments now.
Yeah, I know. He's down there. I see him. But yeah, that's a total podcast plug. All right. Thank you for coming back with us. Now it is on to talking about Marvel's Loki in the finale. And I know a lot of you are here today to just listen to me take this victory lap. I almost went in and I looked at the actual section where I predicted what was going to happen at the end of Loki. And I almost had Rich pull it out so I could just broadcast again. But I decided I'm not ready to take my life in that petty direction, especially not post-pandemic. I'm not going to be that petty anymore. So I didn't do it. But we can all just recognize that I called it. So what happened in this Loki finale? We're going to talk Loki spoilers. Yeah, I mean, it's been enough days now. It's all out
it's
there.
Been, like, yeah. I hate waiting to be able to talk about, like, how long do you wait before you can actually openly talk?
Some people save it for the weekend, and I get that. Okay. You want to have your piece of your golden piece of content. And so we're just going to put up a spoiler warning, but we're on to talking about what's next here. So just to recap, we're going, like I said, you can listen to Phase Zero. They did an excellent episode right after the Loki finale aired. You can do the immediate catch up there. But we found out that in the Citadel at the end of time is he who remains, which is Jonathan Majors. Matt, they would do that on a Disney Plus show. Debut a major new character, star Janelle sips her tea. I love it. Yeah, so me and Cunning Linguist down there, we both called it that the premise of this whole Loki show was Immortus was the one controlling the TVA in order to kind of keep this quote-unquote sacred timeline as a way from keeping Kang from storming all of kind of the multiverse in reality. And this was his kind of way of boxing out Kang. Of course, Loki and Sylvie messed that up by killing off he who remains, who is Immortus, basically. And now opening up the Marvel multiverse. And of course, with that infinite possibilities comes Kang, or more accurately, the Kang Collective. Or a Council of Kangs, or Council of Crosstime Kangs, however they're going to, or the composite of that in the MCU, basically. So there's going to be a lot of Kangs we're dealing with, but presumably also the Prime Kang. So we can just all identify here. We don't get into some Rick and Morty madness. There will be a Prime Kang, who is kind of the Kang leader. Exciting stuff. I think Marvel really, as people have been freaking out about this, I was just like, yeah, I peeped the game, Marvel. You did really good on this. Because what they essentially did is make this huge kind of blowing headline generating thing that would keep most fanboys happy by essentially just getting Jonathan Majors half an Immortus cosplay costume and letting him kind of monologue in front of a green screen with Tom Hiddleston and Sophia DiMartino for like 45 minutes. And that's basically all we got. I call it the JJ method because it's the kind of same trick Lost pulled a lot of the time, but it works, right? Like, we were all excited. I was up out of my seat at like 3 a.m. like, yes, like 40 times. Every time one of those little CGI sandy things made it to a different shape, I was like that meme of Leonardo DiCaprio, like, there it is. Like, yeah. Like,
oh, that is a good comparison, Jim. That's a cosmic Willy Wonka. That's a good comparison.
Yeah, cosmic Willy Wonka. Yeah, Johnny Depp's or Gene Wilder's, Jim. What would you call that? Which Willy Wonka are we talking?
There's only one Willy Wonka. Let's not get it twisted here.
That's true.
It's Gene Wilder.
Hey, Johnny Depp had a couple good lines. I use you're a mumbler all the time, or you're really weird in real life all the time. I'm not hating, but don't get me wrong. I'm a Gene Wilder fan. You know, don't let's not go there. Let's stay on topic. All right. Jonathan Majors. So, we're getting Kang. We're getting this multiverse. And what I love about this is, and they've already started doing this, is just letting Jonathan Majors just like show up places. Right. And it's a gimmick that could be really heady and confusing with this alternate Kang stuff. But visually, it's really simple for the audience. You see this dude. You're like, oh, there's something up here. Like, you know, and you don't know which kind of variant he's going to be, because Kang has had a lot of variants. And then we've talked about this on the show over and over, from the comic book established ones like Rama Tut to just being the mayor of some weird Midwestern town somewhere like in the 20th century, like he shows up. So there are a lot of fun ways to insert not just Jonathan Majors, but any kind of other actor who could play a different version of Jonathan Majors into places and surprise fans. Like, you could do a whole Iron Lad thing before most viewers would know that's connected to Kang in any kind of way, right? Because you would have to cast a younger actor than Jonathan Majors. I was surprised they didn't go with an older actor and for Immortus and do that whole thing. But, you know, like I said, this was balling on a budget, and they did it smartly.
I'm so glad they didn't do that.
Yeah, and they didn't even get into that. They just made it simple. They're like, this is the dude, okay? Yeah. He'll say he's old in this version, and that's all you need to know. We didn't even get into different names and all that stuff. But
it's okay to be vague sometimes.
Yeah, so we were right about a lot of things from this. We were right about our whole theory about Spider-Man No Way Home and the marketing for that. You know, What If is now going to be obviously more connected to this. I want to get your guys' theories, because I'm beginning to wonder also, like, how much Thor Love and Thunder will be affected by this. And if this whole Jane Foster thing isn't part of this whole kind of multiverse, and will we see more Thors potentially? Like, we could get.
I didn't even think of that.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Well, because obviously we're getting into, I mean, this is very much getting into Secret Wars territory. And I mean, that whole event, right? We had like the Thor Corps, and we had the Carol Corps, and we had all kinds of, like, we had that ultra powerful Dr. Doom, right? There's so much there that they can mine. And we're going to see some of that, obviously, in like What If and Doctor Strange probably, but like, that, there's a lot of fun stuff there that you can run with, and like the MCU does, right? Pick little cherry pick little things and run with that. Mm-hmm. I am curious as to how because I don't know if that, I mean, I would say if we see the multiple Thors thing, that would be really cool. But I hope there's a certain point where, like, we talk about this with the DC universe all the time because of, like, the multiverse craziness. There is a certain point where things can overwhelm your central story, and like the Jane Foster story in Thor is like one of my favorite Thor.
It's already awesome, yeah.
So like, I don't need a ton of that. Like, I want that to be on the back burner. I want that to be background. I want Jane Foster as Thor and that storyline or whatever they take from it.
Child, you in danger. I got something to tell you.
I want it to be that.
Listen to me, and I want everybody to listen to me closely.
Oh, here we go.
Now we're getting into this mad. No, I'm not. I'm just telling you. this is not a brag. This is just me trying to like level everybody out. Like, I don't want to like bum everybody out, but if you are expecting the next Spider-Man movie, the next Doctor Strange movie, the next Thor movie to be about these the titular characters that we're talking about here, these are going to be event films, right? Like, well, it's settling.
Well, everything is done in that except for Thor. Like, Spider-Man No Way Home, that's been the running joke, is that, it's not about Spider-Man. It's about everything else that's happening around him, and the poor guy gets, like, 5 minutes of screen time. Same way with Doctor Strange. The title says Multiverse and Madness in it.
Yeah.
Thor is different.
What about Ant-Man?
Like, you're putting, like, Jane Foster Thor is strong enough, more than strong enough, and should not, especially like with the way things are now, and like you're gonna finally spotlight your like female Thor character who like deserves it, you know what I mean, in every single way, and like this character is such a huge deal, and then you're going to throw in all that multiverse muckiness. Like, no, don't do that. Like, that's
but this is Taika Waititi's
thing. I understand, but I understand everyone looks at Ragnarok as like this perfect piece, but
No. It's
okay. Become, I just like,
yeah, Ragnarok become most one of the most like divisive somehow Marvel movies in the last year.
I get that it's going to be good. I'm not saying that. And I'm not saying that some of that stuff can't add to it, but like, let's not, like, I don't want that movie to become what these other movies are becoming. I don't want that. That needs to be something a little separate because that character deserves it.
I think if anybody in this list is going to have fun with this multiverse craziness, it's going to be Taika Waititi. So
just don't let it overwhelm it.
I don't know about that. And as Janelle brought up, Quantumania, I mean, that title and what we know about the quantum realm being this pathway between realities and timelines, like, it's pretty easy to plug that one in too.
I'm so much more excited about it after this Loki finale, about the Ant-Man.
Yeah. Who was the ship that escaped in the beginning and the opening of this Loki episode? Who's on that ship? Anybody?
No Skrulls? I don't know.
What are you saying, Connor?
A very specific group of four people, perhaps.
Yeah. Don't know what they're into. Let's go. Mm-hmm. I can see that.
It'd be, I mean, at this point, you don't know where Kevin Feige's dropping these reveals. They could be anywhere. So, I want to know who's on that ship. Is it the aerospace engineer? Has he been on?
Don't do it.
Jeez.
Can I jump off of what Matt was saying real quick?
Yeah, go for it. Absolutely.
I think the real the $10 billion question with the MCU going forward is, I think, the juggling act between this and this multiverse idea. And also being able to tell compelling standalone stories and whatever the hell they are building up with Julie Louis-Dreyfus and her Thunderbolts, the supposed young Avengers getting built up in the background of all of these Disney Plus shows, the ones that we know are coming up. How do they keep all of this compelling and keep it building up while also dealing with, hey, there's a multiverse now, the timelines are wrecked, we're seeing different variants of people popping up at different places. I doubt this has anything to do with Hawkeye or maybe even the next Cap movie, Shang-Chi. Like, it's I'm worried because we talk about how if you're a fan trying to jump into this now, you might be confused unless you start way back at the beginning. Think of how much harder that's going to be when we've got all these different plot threads going. And on top of that, oh, by the way, there's our version of Crisis of Infinite Earths going on in the background sometimes. It's going to be very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, you're right that, you know, BD, if he was still here, he has been dropping good theories, and you never know what he knows behind the scenes. But that shot, like, you know, some of these will avoid it. We all think Eternals is going to avoid it by either.
Eternals is its own bag of cats, right? Yeah. There. That thing's insane.
Because they can just say, oh, we're somehow not involved in all this, even though it's the multiverse. And they're like, eh, that's not our problem still somehow. Because who knows what gets them off the couch? That's what this whole movie is about to answer for us. And Shang-Chi is kind of suspected to be centered around the snap or the blip, and kind of that'll set him up going forward after we know all about him after the blip and everything's reestablished, like where he is, and, you know, kind of doing that will be where we possibly end off. So it does come down to these films, Spider-Man, Doctor Strange, and whatever is going to be happening in Thor, which is kind of the biggest mystery, because you never know how Taika is going to do it. Like, all these storylines could be completely remixed into something crazy like he did with Ragnarok. So yeah, it's going to be an interesting balancing act for sure. It's also going to be interesting because we also weirdly have, as we Loki, this first wave of Marvel Disney Plus series kind of goes with Loki and What If blowing open this multiverse. Then we got this very grounded second wave coming up with like Miss Marvel and She-Hulk being like a fourth wall breaking courtroom
thing. Moon Knight, baby.
And Moon Knight, and whatever the hell could happen in Moon Knight, and possibly getting into the supernatural and vampires. And like, yeah. So it's kind of it, like Connor said, it's going to be a crazy balancing act, but right now, I mean, we were all like after Endgame, like, yo, I don't know how Kevin Feige going to do this, man. This time travel stuff they set out is crazy. And Feige's just like, you ever heard of a double down? Like, how about a triple down, fool? Like, here's Loki, and now here's an entire thing. We're going even crazier with this. So I'm interested to see. I'm in for the ride, so I'm interested to see where it goes.
Where do you think Loki season two will go, and where is it going to land in these like releases of movies and shows?
I'm excited, but I'm also a little nervous because I feel like we're getting into the territory of what was that Fox series? Oh man, with Joshua Jackson and what's her name from Manhunter. Fringe. Yeah,
we're getting into Fringe. Show.
Yeah, I loved it too. But we're getting into Fringe territory where Fringe kind of burned itself out on that alternate reality take where every season they basically just redressed the cast and said, well, now we're in a different reality of the Fringe verse, and this is different, and here's everything that's different. So I feel like Loki's going to do that. We're just going to redress the original cast and have them act out new kind of story arcs. But I love what I saw in season one, so I'm excited for that.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but haven't they already finished filming season two?
That's the rumor, yes.
Did that drop before Multiverse of Madness or after?
It's rumored that either if they haven't done it, they're getting ready to do it. And if they have done it, then it'll probably be here in 2022 at some point. So it's either going to be 2022 or early 2023. Yeah,
I'm already ready for it.
it might come together with, when's Quantumania? Is that 2023?
I think so.
Yeah.
It was 2022. Okay.
Janelle, can you Google? You are our resident Google.
I also can't hear Quantumania without breaking into a Hulk Hogan impression. It's Quantumania, brother.
Yeah, I mean, as rightly as you should, you know. So it's going
to be February 17th, 2023.
Yeah. So Loki could be early. I could see Loki either being right, season two being right before that movie or after it, depending on what the storyline is.
Yeah. Because we need more Kang.
Yeah, more Kang.
Kang gang.
Kang. All right. So, Kang gang. All right. Dang. So that's our Marvel theories. We would love to hear yours. Hit us up on the @ComicBookNation Twitter feed. And drop some, or just under our post about today's episode, and let us know what you guys think, because we always love your feedback so we can discuss some of this stuff. So hit us up. Or if you're in the comments right now, also hit us up. All right, real quick, I'm just going to touch on the new movie. If you guys are adults and looking for a movie this weekend, that sounded dirtier than I meant it to. But
God, this movie looks so scary.
Escape Room 2. My wife refused to go with me to see it.
I'm with her.
Go to Escape Room. She's that claustrophobic thing, like, really gets to her. So she was like, nah, bro, you're good. Go see that. She said exactly like that, too. But I went out and saw this because I actually was pleasantly surprised by the first Escape Room. I thought, like, this is going to be some B-movie trash, which it was, but it was very enjoyable because of just the horror movie premise of having to escape these deadly versions of escape rooms. I think it's the most interested I've ever been in escape rooms. So, yeah. Tournament of Champions is the second one, and the premise is that survivors of previous escape rooms get thrown into this kind of even more screwed up escape room concept. This one's not as tight as the first one. It kind of gets a little bit of sophomore-itis in the sense that it tries to get bigger with the mythology. And it looks like it did for most of it. It's actually really good because it's kind of an easy film to put together. It's sequence to sequence. It's literally room to room that you're going with this group of people, and one or two get knocked off at a time. But I don't know if it was COVID for this movie or what, but the ending, it's another one of those endings that feels like really weirdly truncated and kind of just like, okay, we just got to get this thing in the bag right now and kind of get it done. And there's this very just end sequence that's just very throws you for a loop and is just like, wait, what is happening here? And then it kind of just ends with Clear just like, oh, I guess we'll pick this up later and try to like wrap this up later kind of feel to it. So that was disappointing at the end. But for most of it, it was really, really kind of good. The sequences in the rooms are bigger, kind of badder and more screwed up. And they actually hold your attention by having people. It's not just like a simple kill, like a knockoff, like it is like a whole sequence, and you can fill 7 or 8 minutes of these people. It's like a real escape room. The traps have multiple parts to them. So you solve one part, but you need to solve another part, but then you got to solve another part, and then you need that all while before you get out of them. And there's like one sequence in a bank vault that is really excellent in that respect. So the premise is still good. You can keep cranking out these films forever, but hopefully they have more time and space to kind of really pull it together at the end of the next one. So that's
escape room. When do we get the Saw crossover is the real question.
Oof. I mean, the money's on the table for that. Yeah. An escape room's design. That would be a crazy, like, in-universe reveal. It's like you go through another escape room movie, and at the end, you just see a screen. It was like, how did you like the game? And you're like, what?
Okay, that would actually be really cool.
Yeah. I think just Connor just improved this franchise. So Escape Room 2 is now in theaters. If you want to check out that, I would recommend, like, a matinee viewing. Matt, take it away. We got some big comics to talk about this week.
Yeah, so let's stay on the Marvel front and go with Sinister War. Sorry, I was going to say Spider-Man. Sinister Spider-Man. Spider-Man Sinister War number one, which if you've been reading the current run, I know we've only dipped into it a few times. We talked about the so this one is, of course, Nick Spencer and Mark Bagley. It very much feels like, and again, this is partially because of the artwork, this very much feels like a 90s Spider-Man story. This entire run has actually had that kind of soap opera.
Mark Bagley, it really does.
Feels like I was taken through a time warp. That's not in a bad way necessarily. I'm just saying, like, that's the Spider-Man that, like, I most remember. So same. That is actually, for me, that was kind of cool. And they very much lean into all the, like, MJ stuff. We get some of the Mephisto stuff. Obviously, I should say, spoilers coming for this. But with comics now, we're on Friday, so I don't feel as bad for spoiling things since it was previously on Wednesdays. So we lean more into that. The biggest thing here, of course, is the battle between the Sinister Six, which is the kind of classic group, and the Savage Six, and how MJ's new kind of found friend being kind of in the middle of that. And so there's all that going on, plus all the Kindred stuff, which I don't know if anyone read the Chameleon Conspiracy, which has kind of been taking over the last arc or two of the Spider-Man books. But like the Kindred stuff ties directly to that. There's a lot going on here. But overall, like the biggest thing of the issue is, if you like superhero action sequences, there's a lot to like here. I mean, the second half of the book is really just a giant boss fight between the two groups, actually, and Spider-Man just kind of caught in the middle. you know, this very much felt like a throwback. I don't know, and I will be curious because I know Janelle is kind of jumping into this, and I'm not sure if you've, like, how much of the other stuff you've read. So this is, as a jumping on point, if you're just kind of, oh, hey, there's a new Spider-Man event, let me dive into that, I would be curious to see what you thought. For me, it was like, I liked it. I was fine with it. Like, I didn't love it as much as I thought, but like, there's some nostalgia mixed in there. But what did you think?
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that. Like, it was neutral. It was cool. I mean, I know a lot of the Spider-Man villains because it's one of the most common, you know, commonly portrayed heroes. Like, Spider-Man, if you've watched any of the old movies, like, you can recognize Doc Ock, and like, you kind of know, I mean, even just from the ride at Islands of Adventure, I recognized like a few. I'm like, oh yeah, he like totally slammed his electrodes into the buggy when I was riding Spider-Man back when I was a kid, the ride. So it was interesting to see. I loved the whole actress and like red carpet and the glamour and the glitz and like, oh yeah, we did spoil, right?
Yeah, you were good.
I loved seeing the cool perspective of Mephisto. Like, wait, did I say Mephisto? Wow. Mephisto confirmed. I don't know why I just threw that in there. But I loved seeing like all of these villains banding together, just kind of creating drama. It was kind of weird that like their motivation was odd. Like, you portrayed me in a movie.
Yeah, it was kind of weird.
It was kind of like, really? Like, this is why you're attacking? It was just kind of, it felt very dramatic. Like,
right.
It felt very dramatic, but I really enjoyed seeing the artwork, and I loved seeing, you know, like I said, like the gown and the red carpet, like she looked really sexy and it was just cool. I kind of almost didn't read this one because you said it was optional, but I am glad I did. Like, I'm glad I actually read it. And I read it this morning drinking my coffee, and it was like a cool little, you know, it was a cool book to read.
It's a good read for that. Yeah,
it was. Yeah. Like, it wasn't like a must read, but it was, I enjoyed it.
And you hammered it on the head there, that dramatic thing. Cause those older Spider-Man stories, I love them, but they were very melodramatic. And, you know, Kofi, what'd you think kind of, because you're kind of from that same spot as I am.
I thought that I was going to say, I'm kind of on the board with you and Janelle. It was, I think you are correct. This was very much like the most 90s Spider-Man thing that I've ever read recently. And that's good and bad. So the nostalgia factor was there for me, but it also had all the drawbacks of 90s Spider-Man, of which if you go back and read 90s comics in general, there are many. But yeah, this one was kind of like over the top comic bookish in a way. And not in a kind of kitschy, self-referential way, in like an earnest way, but like it just threw everything at the wall. Like, at page to page, it was just like a spattering of events, right? Like, oh, here's the Savage, you know, MJ's got a big premiere, and there's, you know, the MJ Peter drama with that. You know, MJ's keeping a secret. There's that drama on the Peter Parker side. Whoops, the Savage Six like show up. Whoops, the Sinister Six show up on top of that. And then like, all of this, it would be good if it was anchored by like a compelling story or villain, but I don't feel like that's coming through this story yet. At least not yet. I'm sorry to say that, like, for all the mystery of the buildup and how exciting it was, Kindred is not like, is really just not doing it from a design point to the powers point. Like, everything's so weird and vague and just kind of like, what is this guy up to? Like, what's he doing now? He's like splitting off from bodies. So now there's like, he is Harry Osborn, but there's a dead Harry Osborn and there's a live Harry Osborn. He's basically stealing Maggot's whole shtick from X-Men, like with the,
and not murder. As cool. Not nearly as cool.
So we don't have a compelling villain at the center of this. I don't see any kind of compelling design or, we always say, like, even no matter how comic booky crazy it gets, there needs to be like a basic premise. Like, Hickman is good at that. No matter how crazy Secret Wars gets, it's this basic premise. The world got messed up. This is all that's left cobbled together. And there's a fight to kind of keep it or to put it back in order. That's it. And then all the other craziness that happens under that umbrella, you can still guide your way by this simple idea. It's a battle we got to win to put the universe back together. This, I don't know where we are, like what's going on. It's just heavy Spider-Man references being kind of like dug up constantly. And like you said, if you haven't been steeped in Spider-Man the last few years, like a lot of this goes over your head. Like,
I haven't read enough to be like, I saw the Savage Six and I was just like, okay, I get it, I guess, but I don't really care about this. So yeah. I mean, I think Spider-Man books, and I'm just going to put this out there, have been kind of weak in general for a while now. And there's hints that this is trying to kind of course correct a lot of that, like from the moment they did the, you know, the Mephisto MJ's Peter marriage thing, that they're trying to kind of correct all of that, because that's also framed in here. One more day. Yeah. So it looks like they're trying to reset Spider-Man and simplify that, but it's going to be an ugly process.
You're right. Cause like Spencer's run is ending at some point. We're getting towards the end of that run, and then we're going to launch into the thrice monthly Spider-Man series that has like all the multiple creators, including Saladin from Miles, Thompson. Like there's going to be some really cool people. I believe, is it Zeb? Well, I forget who the third creator is, on the new books, but, I'm excited for that. So yeah, we are kind of getting closer and closer to this. The Kindred stuff hasn't paid off like I was hoping it would. We'll see if they stick the landing. So while we're on the topic previously of multiverses, let's go right into Infinite Frontier number 2. I remember that, I believe, I know Janelle did, and I can't remember, Kofi, if you did, but I think we actually came out pretty positive on that first issue of Infinite Frontier, which essentially takes a little, it's kind of telling a larger story, but it's really a bunch of smaller stories all kind of dealing with everything that happened after the last big crisis, where all these multiverses are restored, memories, people are kind of remembering all these things, and we're dealing with all these little pockets. This follows the same trajectory. There's so many little moments in here that I really dug, like the Alan Scott Vandal Savage moment. I thought it was great. The Roy Harper Black Lantern stuff and the Dark Side ties, I'm eating that up. Like there's actually a lot of really interesting things going on through here. I thought this one was not as strong as the last one, just because there's this kind of running thing. The Director Bone stuff is supposed to kind of anchor everything, because like you're seeing the investigation of all these things, and that's how everything is tied together. And that component is boring for me. Like that's just not clicking. So like that part, and there's a lot of that in this issue, because like we see Captain Atom, and yeah, there's even a reveal there that ties in, but like everything else is just like that part is so boring, and that, there's a lot in this issue of that. So I'm like, eh, but I still really like it. I like the premise. I like the teases that we got here. What did you guys think?
I can sum up real quick. I'm actually kind of the opposite of you. I thought there was a little too much scattershot in the concept of the first issue. I'm not done this one. I still have a little bit to go, and I'm not saying that in a bad way, because I actually like it. This is kind of a dense book, because it's marrying these two concepts together that are very tricky to hold together, which is kind of an investigative, almost like FBI procedural, with the entire DC multiverse craziness concept. And keeping those together is really hard. But I think this issue actually settles more into the rhythm of how that works and how to do it. And I find it much more interesting. Like that agent, like bugging Batman and Superman about them and asking them questions.
That part was good. That part
was
good.
Dude, like we've had a Batman and evil Batman show up and take control of Gotham. But then we had a different evil Batman come up and take control of the whole multiverse. And like, what happens when this another evil Superman shows up and they're just both like, huh? And like, that's the kind of thing, like that there is this task force trying to get its hands around, you know, trying to X-Files the entire DC multiverse, and their kind of workplace struggles and is kind of funny and actually a good concept. And I hope they just continue to refine it, because it actually does help bring some grounded ways to look at this whole DC multiverse thing. And the cast of characters is funny. I just think there is an imbalance in the characters that, you know, using these big characters like Batman, Superman versus the actual characters in the book who are the main
characters. Right. That's a good point, though, because that sequence was great. I actually liked that sequence a lot, just because the questions she's asking are very like grounded questions, pragmatic questions that anyone would be curious of. So that's good.
Well, more importantly, like a government agency trying to defend against this and handle all this. And I like that they deal with like the whole thing that like everybody knows about this now, like this multiverse and what it does to normal people. to know, like, to have the world shut, because it is very, it's a smart, timely echo of like what we're living through now, where people's kind of sense of safety and normalcy and how the world works has been like horribly shattered by a once, you know, 100-year pandemic and things like that. And now we're kind of trying to deal with the loss of the sense of safety and, like, you know, all of that. And this does that subtle good job of that. So I'm enjoying this book. It's very dense, and I feel like it's more of an adult read in a weird way, even though it deals with like a bunch of comic booky concepts. But I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it as well. And just like you said, there have been quite a few books that have touched on like the pandemic and all of that stuff that we have read, but they've been so on the nose and like over the top. This one, it is nice. Like, that's a really good point, Kofi. Matt, I'm so glad you said that, all of that about Bones, where she's like, that's like tying everything and like keeping everything grounded with her, because I had no idea. Like, I didn't understand what her role was, like why we're even hearing her story or like her dialogue at all. So I'm actually glad you said that, because now I think I have a better understanding of like where it's going, and that's cool. It's a good book. I like it. I really enjoyed it. It's a different perspective. And now that all this multiverse stuff, I mean, I'm also watching Arrowverse for the first time, and I'm watching Flash, and he literally just like jumped. He just like totally twisted time up. So my brain is kind of like swelling with multiverse stuff, and I'm kind of eating up anything like this. So I think that's why I'm kind of biased. I really do like this book a lot.
Well, and I love the end too, because that last page actually shows Director Bones like looking at that screen, and it lays out like all the things they actually already know of, like, they know where Wonder Woman is, and they're like, is she ever going to get out? Like, it lays out all the things that, it's cool because you go through the whole story, and why I didn't like love every section of it, there's some good stuff in there about them probing for questions, and then you see what they actually know, like all the stuff that's behind this list. So that's cool. It gives a macro level perspective. So last book here is probably the biggest one. Save the best for last. Star Wars War of the Bounty Hunters, number two. And I feel like you talk about how there's a lot of names and concepts going on in the DC book. That's how I felt in this book. I love Star Wars, but like, I'm not the like aficionado of like every single name.
You got so, like, me, baby.
There's so many names. I was kind of actually gonna pretty much like ask Kofi to like take the lead on this one, because other than what I will say is, because there was a lot of names thrown around, and I'm like, I don't know who that is. I don't know who that person is. Dr. Aphra is my favorite. I can almost safely say that Dr. Aphra is my favorite Star Wars character. There's just such a, like, every time she's on the page. And like, she's just so endearing and like so much personality, and it's so fun, and makes all the other stuff, kind of the bigger concepts going on, just like, I'm immersed because I care about her. And I just love the stuff. Like, we've pissed off everybody in this room. Like, we like all that stuff that's going on throughout this book is great. But like, once we start like, hey, it's from this planet and there's this, I was like, it's like my signal got scrambled. So Kofi, like, what did you think about that, because you are far more immersed in that
universe. I'm pleasantly surprised by War of the Bounty Hunters, because it is really tough at this point to pull off Star Wars stories alone, just like single stories within the original trilogy era, during the kind of galactic civil war, because there has been like so much done about that time period. And this is one of the most ambitious things I've seen, is because they are crossing over like so many characters, in major characters from like film franchises and TV shows and the comics, into this one big crossover that's set at this pivotal point between Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. And they're pulling it off, in my opinion. Like, it's actually really enjoyable. And so, yeah, this War of the Bounty Hunters 2, if you are a deep cut Star Wars fan, the deeper you are into this stuff, the more rewarding it is. Because you see Boba Fett like battle Bosk, who is the guy who trained him when he was just after, you know, Attack of the Clones, when he was just a little clone out on his own trying to make his way. Bosk is the bounty hunter that took him under his wing and showed him basically like how to become Boba Fett. And so they're having this kind of surrogate father-son battle in this thing. And it's really cool, because you know, they just showed up on screen together in Empire in that one little cameo scene. And now we're getting this entire history between them. And so, like, it pays off this stuff. Dr. Aphra's great because, like, she has crossed over. She's been the crossover kind of character that they've used to plug into so many things in the Star Wars OT trip. You know, one, she's had a lot of freedom and they filled in a lot of blanks. Like, she's the one who got the location of the Hoth base for the Empire to save her own ass from Darth Vader and, you know, all this stuff. So it's really good how they're actually bringing these together. And even, you know, Leia, when she got to take the lead in rescuing Han and how and filling in the blanks of how she got from the end of Empire into Jabba's palace and even why she's wearing that disguise and of that other bounty hunter that tried to take her out and she ended up kicking his ass and taking his clothes and impersonating him. And so, like, you know, it's really actually good fulfilling Star Wars backstory and fill in. And none of it's making your head hurt with continuity errors or anything. They found a good piece of time to kind of play with and make this big event that happened that they can do it this big. And still at the end, it's still self-contained enough to not affect anything from the beginning of Return of the Jedi. Right. Like you just have a deeper understanding of how much freaking trouble it was to get Han back and how long it took. And so I'm really enjoying it. And these two issues were a good week because Dr. Aphra, they do almost like a Rashomon thing where War of the Bounty Hunters and Dr. Aphra's stories are almost like in certain panels, you know, identical panel to panel when she comes in War of the Bounty Hunters and her storyline is identical to her solo issue. And they do that very well, kind of meshing them all together. And you have Boba Fett, Bosk, Dr. Aphra, Darth Vader, Leia, Leia, Chewie, Lando.
So many people.
Freaking Kira and Crimson Dawn from Solo. Like, all of these people are at the same party. And Jabba the Hutt and the entire who have their own drama going, are all in the same party scene at the same time. And it's just, and if you're a Star Wars like geek, it's hard. And I mean, this is ultimate mark out material. So enjoy.
It's so good to see Kobe so high. Like, it's such a
I'm loving Star Wars comics and books right now. They're giving me life.
So good. Janelle, what'd you think?
I mean, Kofi said it all pretty beautifully, but as a casual Star Wars fan, kind of like you, Matt, I really enjoyed it. It's really easy for me to follow, even if there's maybe characters or people that I don't really know, I still kind of get their vibe in this book, which is, that's pretty impressive because they have like one line, you know, and yet I'm like, okay, they've kind of figured, like told me who this person is, what they're about. And there were just a few moments that I really, really, really enjoyed. And gosh, I like, this is one that I would not want to spoil for people because when certain people show up, you're just like, oh my gosh, it's just really exciting. It's unexpected. Like the end of the book was completely unexpected for me. And yeah, I just really, really good. And also just awesome to see Leia jump in there. Like, yeah, it was just a good, really good book. It was really, really well done.
It's good, man. Star Wars has been killing it lately.
Yeah.
So if you I'm are impressed. Not reading those, you know, from both a casual and a hardcore, there's a recommendation both ways. So
definitely. I would say that was my favorite book of the week.
All right. Let's give you guys some time for wrestling.
Yes.
Here we go. All right, Matt. So we've got ourselves a busy little schedule coming up this week. We've got WWE is back on the road starting tonight down in Houston. You get to acknowledge the tribal chief live and in person. And if you don't, I'm telling on you. Then we've got Slammiversary tomorrow right here in Nashville, Tennessee. Myself and I believe Matt will also be attending. We've got Money in the Bank on Sunday, Raw's on Monday in Dallas. It's live in front of fans too. It's an exciting stretch of days, but we'll start with Slammiversary because we don't talk about Impact Wrestling that much, but there's a couple of big talking points. The first being Kenny Omega is still on his Thanos quest and he has the Impact World Championship. He's defending it against an absolute psychopath in Sami Callihan. Matt, is there any chance in the world this is where Kenny starts to fall?
Oh man, it's a weird thing. I want to say yes, because I feel like who else is there? Like who? Like right now on Impact, other than Moose, but like that seems like a far like. Right now, positioned at this moment in time, I don't see like Moose being at that spot, like just for whatever reason, to be not talent wise, but just like from a push perspective, to be like on that level where they would take the belt off of Omega. So like Callahan seems like the biggest and most credible threat. And, you know, he's been champion before. He's had good runs. Like this would be, and he's been not the champion long enough to where it would probably feel fresh again, you know, for that to happen. So like, it seems like all everything points to, yes, this is the time. And yet it's, for whatever reason, I just can't like pull the trigger and say like, yeah, because I don't know. I don't feel like it's still the right time for them to do it. But I just don't know who does it after Callahan. I don't see anybody else at that tier level that could, you could go, oh yeah, you know, it taking it off Omega. Yeah, we can see that happening. Everything else would feel like too much of a work. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
It's right.
I'm weird. I'm caught.
So I'm going to get you uncaught, because I think you need to consider a couple things with Kenny. It's not just that he is an Impact. It's that he's also juggling his stuff with AEW and with AAA. So first loss he takes is a big deal. He has not suffered a singles pinfall loss since November of 2019, that lights out match with Jon Moxley, which wasn't even sanctioned. You got to go back even further to the match with Pac at All Out earlier that August. It's been a long time since he actually has been beaten. So that first loss is going to be a big freaking deal. And if you think it's not going to be an AEW, I think you're nuts. I think the first title he needs to drop is the AEW one, which we're setting up for this. God, this end of a 3-year storyline between him and Hangman at All Out. I think that's his first real loss. That's where he drops that title. And then we see the other pieces start to fall away. As for what they do with AAA, I think he beats Andrade in August at Triple Mania and then maybe loses in a rematch. I'm not going to here to speculate what they're doing down in Mexico. I'm just not. As for Impact, you have a couple options, and it's not Sammy. I think the first one is Josh Alexander. He's the X Division champion right now. They have this gimmick with that title where you can cash in the belt for a shot at the world title. It's called Option C. I actually interviewed him about this, and he says it's on the table for him. He teased it the night he won the X Division title. And if you're going to look at anybody and go, this is the guy that can carry us into the future with Impact, Alexander's a perfect guy. He is... his nickname on the indies is the Iron Man of pro wrestling. He loves 60-minute Iron Man matches, and his in-ring style is very reminiscent of one Kurt Angle. So if you're going to base a company around anybody, that's a pretty solid bet. And where he is right now, I wouldn't say to do it. But if he comes out of this Ultimate X match, which is what I'm most looking forward to because those things are insane – if he comes out of that and is still X Division champion come October when we get to Bound for Glory, that's perfect. Other option, you could always go back to Moose because that guy needs to get crowned at some point. He's got a new deal.
Good,
he was robbed of his last title because the Young Buckaroos decided to interfere. Or you go back to Rich Swann and kind of have him, hey, you dropped the ball earlier this year when you dropped the title to him. So maybe this is your redemption tour. I don't know. But they've got some options. I don't think Sammy is one of them.
Interesting.
Now, the other big thing with Slammiversary, they did this last year, and they hit us with some surprises. They're doing it again. They're basically teasing, hey, you know everybody who got released by WWE this past year? Yeah, they're coming. Not all of them, but we're going to tease that they're coming.
Yeah.
And you got to tune in and figure out which four or five guys we actually got. Who do you think is actually showing up? Because I can tell you already – the advertisement had Samoa Joe heavily featured, and I don't think he's going to pop up.
Yeah, I don't think that's happening. I will say the one I think, because I'm trying to figure out who the mystery opponent is.
Oh, I already know that one.
Because we initially thought it was Green.
Well, she's obviously popping up elsewhere on that show because her fiance is kind of battling her best friend, his best friend and his ex. In a mixed tag match. Gee, I wonder who his tag partner might be.
Right. So it's like, okay, well then that's probably, you know,
that's
like
it shows up. So then what do you do with Dion?
So it's like, does it, I kind of side with like, it's not a ex WWE person. I'm actually like, my thing is actually like someone that whether it, and I'm not saying it's Tessa Blanchard, but I'm saying someone that was like previously signed with Impact, like Kylie Rae, because like she's was still under contract and all that stuff happened. And she started doing wrestling dates earlier this year. So like, who knows, maybe they work something else out. Right.
With the NWA now. Yeah.
Right. So like, maybe that's something that happens there, but then I do think there will be someone that pops up from WWE. My money is on the former Iconics. I feel like number one, I just loved them in WWE. And so for them to, and I cannot believe they got released. Yeah. Like, that's just one of those. I just don't understand it, especially with their tag team division, like already having issues before they were there, like while they were there. So like, I think them, they would be a perfect fit for Impact. I think they're just like Impact has so much freedom and like how they do comedy, and like you can approach it a bunch of different ways, and we see that every week. So I think they would, man, they would be killer on that show. I think they would just be able to really carve out, especially now with like Fire and Flavor as the, you know, as the Knockout champions. Like that program alone would be worth it. So I think that my money's on them.
They're a lock for me, just because you've reintroduced those Knockouts tag titles and you don't have much of a division to actually fill it with. You've kind of been cobbling wrestlers together to keep.
You've been doing what WWE does,
which basically is, yeah. And so you need legit tag teams. You have Fire and Flava, the Iconics. I think they're calling that the Inspiration now.
Is that their official one going by?
Yeah, okay. with two eyes again, because you know. Also, I've seen the comment section that Snorlax is going to be mystery opponent. I'm afraid to tell you, Snorlax is not signed with Impact Wrestling, so don't expect that kind of cameo. I see you laughing, Janelle, but I'm expecting. I think Deonna is fighting Mickie James.
That's another one.
That's a champion. Good. She's obvious. Her 90-day no compete clause is up. She's already doing stuff with the NWA. She's made it clear that she wants to keep wrestling elsewhere. So I think that's my bet there. One, though, I wouldn't hate if it were somebody like a Dr. Britt Baker or a Thunder Rosa and just completely take us by surprise.
That'd be interesting.
As for other surprises, I'm going to go with Kalisto showing up in that Ultimate X match. I think when I interviewed Josh, he named two people he wanted to show up, Murphy and Kalisto. I don't think that second one was an accident. I think that's how he gets back. And he is just such a perfect fit for the X division. That whole division is based around his wrestling style.
Yeah.
And I think Murphy does show up. I think he is their big get. And I think he is instantly inserted into either the X division or the main event picture. He fits in both. The style matches both.
I think he would knock it out of the park there. So I'm hoping he comes. Yeah. That's a hope one.
I think if any of the big surprises, like, I wrote it in a story yesterday. Don't hold your breath. It's probably not Daniel Bryan.
Yeah, I don't think it's Daniel
Bryan. And it's probably not Braun Strowman. That guy comes with a pretty high asking price. So I don't think it's either of those two. I think of all the big surprises, Murphy is the big one by the end of the night. But then we got Sunday, dear Matthew. We have Money in the Bank. Now, when it comes to the world title matches, Kofi, I'm afraid to say that the Council of Kofis will not be pleased, because I don't think Kofi Kingston is beating Bobby Lashley.
We rebranded into the Kofi Collective for marketing.
That's good. That's a good one, yeah.
My mistake.
We got merch.
Since we got a certain rumor about a certain former WCW star coming back and fighting Bobby Lashley, and you can tell from the tone of my voice just how happy I am with that. But we'll talk about that another day. And I don't think Roman is losing to Edge, because we got Roman John Cena coming up next month by all reports indicating. So that just leaves two big questions. Who the hell is winning those briefcases, Matthew?
Oh, man. So, okay. So when the wrestling team did the predictions,
I got to go back and fix mine, by the way.
Yeah. Right. Cause we both did the same thing. We're like, oh, it's Sasha.
Yeah.
Because there's a mystery spot and that'll be like, they'll hold that. And then they were like, oh, it's Tamina. And we were like,
and there was much rejoicing.
there goes our pick. Now, granted, I'm still, here's the thing. Looking at this list, like the briefcase is always better 9 times out of 10. There are exceptions, but it's always better when a heel has it. It's just, mm-hmm. is. It's just, they can do all kinds of other things, and you can, have different creative storyline choices that only heels can do. And so it just adds to it. Like, even the subpar runs when a heel has it are better. You know, like, look at Miz's most recent run, even though I'm still pissed off Otis. Right. It wasn't good, but it was still better than, like, if you, you know what I mean? Than, like, half of the baby faces you could have given it to, just because, again, he can do certain things with it that baby faces can't. So, like, looking at the list right now, it's like, well, I mean, do you give it to Vega? You know, because, like, that seems, yes. I mean, maybe that was part of the deal, right? Like, coming back in, you get a big run with the briefcase and things like that, maybe. But, like, Sasha makes all the sense. Sasha makes all the sense of the world. So, like, I'm still holding out to pull one of those, like, Becky at the Royal Rumble things, right? When someone's hurt and, like, oh, here's my replacement. And then it's somehow Sasha. Like, I'm still going to go with that, because that's, like, I can't look at this and get a big read. I would say if you're going to give it to a babyface, though, give it to Nikki. Because if you're committed to long-term, they showed with Otis they are not. Most times. But if you're committed to a long-term storyline, you could pay that off, because if you can get, you know, the crowds over with that character and build that over a long period of time, people would be rooting for her to cash that in, and you don't have to do the heel thing. So maybe, but it's hard. Sasha still is my pick.
Yeah, it's so I'm looking at these lineups. And I also have to acknowledge the fact that the booking surrounding the Money in the Bank contract for the past couple of years has been pretty bad. And you can tell that sometimes they run out of ideas by quickly having somebody cash in the same night that they win it. I don't think we're getting that necessarily this week. We do, it's Sasha, because she can just cash right in on Bianca, and then we're right back to where we were.
Right.
I am so terrified they're going to give it to Alexa Bliss. I am just...
I don't know why they would, though, right now. It seems like a weird pivot.
Because it gets her back in the title pick. Because it gets her back in the title picture with all of this, what she's doing right now, which I got some bad news for you. I don't think that is going to be well received at all when there are fans actually in the crowd. But
we'll see.
That's my guess. As for the men's side, I hope it's not Riddle, because he's talking about just making it a tag team cash in, which, you know, fine for the story, but all you need to do to get a tag title match, just walk up and ask for one. They don't put a lot of thought behind it. The exciting options for me, and it's what I'm really hoping for, is somebody, whether it's Sasha or Becky, somehow you throw back her into the equation.
They'll give me hype, man.
They get inserted to the match last minute and they win. And for the men's side, give it to Big E. I know you're doing this thing with Goldberg and Bobby Lashley. That's fine. I know that, you know, Roman is going to hold that title till the heat death of the universe, but he's doing nothing right now. At the start of the year, he looked like he was the next guy. He was next up in line to get that real main event push. And ever since Mania, he's just kind of been treading water.
Well, it didn't help that they, you know, had released his next opponent.
Well, and then they had him fight Apollo 15 times.
Now, granted, that was good at the beginning. That was really good.
It was good. After the eighth time I saw it, I said, you know what? I'd like a different matchup, please. And they said, oh, you want more? Here you go.
And then we were supposed to get Alistair.
And yeah, funny how that turned out.
Yeah,
But the dude is ready. And it doesn't have to be a New Day breakup. It doesn't have to. This doesn't even have to be his big crowning moment, but just put him in a world title picture. And this is the fastest way to do it. So that's what I'm pushing for.
He's a good choice.
How do you feel about SummerSlam right now, though? Because we know three matches. Roman Reigns versus John Cena. Cena getting a few nods here earlier this episode. Seth Rollins versus Edge. And Bobby Lashley versus Bill Goldberg. How do you feel, Matt?
Because
this is supposed to be the biggest show of the year. This is supposed to be 2021's WrestleMania. You thought WrestleMania 37 was a big deal? Well, shut up.
Okay, so if we are looking at it from just that angle,
yeah,
it's actually building quite nicely. If you look at it from how WWE looks at these things, right, which is like we need big name power, we need star power, we need matchups that we haven't had, recently. If you look at it from that perspective, all three of those fit that bill. You haven't had Goldberg versus Lashley. You haven't had Roman versus John Cena in a while. And plus now with like, get ready for them to re-release that clip of that promo battle they had way back when and build that hype up. That production video is going to be amazing. So like have that. And then Rollins versus Edge again, like all three of those. And all three of those have the potential, aside from like the Goldberg one, to be really good matches. Goldberg, it's just, you know, this comes from the biggest Goldberg mark on the planet. Okay. But like those last few times, man, to keep going back to that well, and every time it gets worse, it gets a little worse and it's just painful. So like, you know, I don't, as a match, who knows if that'll deliver, but like from that, feeling pretty good about it so far. If we can do that, apply that same level to the women's matches and balance this thing out and get Becky, which is, you know, the rumor is that Becky's gonna have some sort of like, he's gonna be around, you
she'll
know,
be in, she'll be this, in Houston and then she'll weekend. Be in Fort Worth,
right?
I don't know if she'll be there tonight,
but we've been trolled a million times by her, so like, yeah. I would expect by SummerSlam we will. Yeah. She will be back in the mix. So like Becky versus somebody, right? Whatever, if Bianca's still holding the title or Sasha, like that whole thing. We're going to have some, if we can do that on the other side, feel pretty good about it. Not going to lie.
I'm right there with you. I think with the massive asterisk that is Bill Goldberg, I think SummerSlam could legitimately be the biggest show WWE puts on this year. You want to talk about the biggest box office match they can possibly do right now. It's Roman Reigns versus The Rock. Well, you can't have The Rock right now, but you can have the second biggest match can possibly do right now. And that's Reigns versus John Cena. I'm all for it. Acknowledge him as the tribal chief, even though you refuse to, Matthew. And I think SummerSlam could be awesome.
Also, can I say I'm looking more forward to Reigns Cena than I would be Reigns Rock. And the reason why is just because of the promos back and forth. Rock's amazing on the mic. But like the last time we saw Rock on the mic, like sometimes it felt very dated.
He definitely hits the high notes from his prime.
He does, but like Cena, the last time we saw him still has, you know what I mean? Still has like the ability as far as his promo work goes it doesn't just go back into the same things. They'll touch on stuff. They'll touch on the golden shovel, like all those highlights from those things. But like I'm looking more forward to those segments as we build. And then the match is going to be good regardless of who it was.
I'll counter that and say, I think the family story between Reigns and the rest of the Noe family is the most compelling thing WWE has been doing
for
the
past year.
Everything with the Usos. You're going to keep building on that by bringing Rock in. So I think I think those promos are going to get personal.
They are, which would be amazing if they are. But you know, yeah, I think I'm more looking forward to just like the overall thing between Cena and Reigns. But I think as a storyline, it makes all the sense in the world to go with Rock at some point, and that will be killer. Because it's been great. So,
and you can sell 100,000 in Dallas with that. But yeah, that is wrestling in a nutshell. We got a whole lot, and you can follow it all over on Comic Books WWE section. Back to you, Kofi.
All right, guys. Thank you for the wrestling update. You heard big things happening. Make sure you check that out. And if you don't have time to check out the actual viewings, like Connor said, our comic book wrestling team, and we're even making it better behind the scenes, is going to be handling all of that. So stay tuned. All right. That'll do it for this action-packed and star-studded episode of Comic Book Nation. We want to thank Brandon Davis and Aaron Perrine for coming on and repping for Phase Zero, our Marvel podcast today, and helping us out. We want to thank all you guys for tuning in. We are live every Friday at noon Eastern time on Twitch, Facebook, and YouTube. You can rewatch any episode after our live broadcast on any of those platforms. If you want to listen to the audio, we are on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, or you can tell any smart home device, play Comic Book Nation Podcast. It'll get you into our universe. If you guys want to contact us, you can always follow the Comic Book Nation Twitter account, or you can hit me up at Kofi Outlaw.
You can find me at Matt Aguilar CB.
You can find me at Janelle Wheeler.
and at Connor Casey CB.
Thank you, guys. If you like the show, go on Apple Podcasts and please do leave us a 5-star review. We always appreciate it. Otherwise, we will see you next show. Glad to be back. Glad to have big movie things happening and glad to be talking to all of y'all. This has been Comic Book Nation. Peace.
Hi, guys.
Later.